Welcome to another episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am Triforce Todd. Joining me today is Wario Will.
Okay, so I gotta go and get Desperation 3 on this on a free dual hero Lin and we're on the podcast. I'm sorry, because yeah, now that we just got a free dual hero now, I'm just like trying to look up these builds and I think we've got ourselves a monster here.
I wanted Saros. It doesn't make sense that Saros lost. I mean, she was the clear favorite. So angry. I think I had Lin anyway, so that's just like double mean for me. Also here is my friend Tellius Vision. I mean, Tyler!
Yes, here once again, and with more tidings on the Bravely Default world.
Which we'll be getting to. So, first of all, thank you for everyone who listened to last show. We again thank our new guest host, Nessa Vanessa, for showing up. We hope to have her back very, very soon. But today we're going to have a little bit of a lighter episode, just to take things back and just discuss things in a lighter way. And we're getting all started off with, what have you been playing? And I'll go first, because I went last time. And I have now spent a much longer period of time with Bravely Default 2. And the issue is this the worst game ever? No, I'm kidding. I have actually warmed up a little bit to the game, because if you recall last time I was having serious problems with bosses. Things are just not going right. And then I hit a point where it finally started to level out. I was still occasionally dying at bosses, but not as much as I used to. And I had like a string of like 10 bosses without an issue. One time I just royally screwed up, so I'm like, I'm just going to start over. So, but I am enjoying the game more. The battle system is still not tedious, but it can get annoying at times. Like, I just got done with beating the boss of the fourth crystal, who had a counter that was way too OP. And he was the toughest boss I had faced in a while, but like all the minions up to him, it seemed, were like much tougher than the previous ones I faced.
This is chapter 3?
Yeah. Like the monks and the monsters.
You're playing Dominic? Archbishop?
Yeah, I just beat him.
Okay.
So, and I'm about to go and fight Helio in the war. But the minions up to him like just like seemed like an extra tier. Like it was taking me a lot of special moves to beat them. But then I still was able to get through. Unlike a certain someone, I'm actually enjoying the story. Gee, I wonder who that is.
I'm not.
I know. But and especially in the level I'm at, it's actually ironically rather poignant to our current political climate in terms of us not a certain people not liking a certain race for reasons that are just entirely stupid. So yeah. Also there's dragons, and dragons make everything better. Except Game of Thrones Season 8.
That anyway, dragon looks very cool.
The dragon was cool.
I forget his name, but I think he looked cool.
It's Gwydion.
Gwydion, that's Gwydion. Right.
So, I think my favorite part of Bravely is, I didn't think it'd be this, but I like the look of everything. Like, especially like the towns that we're in. I'm in a place called Rheimdall right now, and they use a great sense of depth and like leveling to make it feel like so big, even though it still only fits on one screen. And there's cutscenes that are very, very cool, and just very high end. And yet other times there are like these pixelated scenes, and I'm like, why?
You didn't see that plot twist coming, right? I was shocked.
Oh, that plot twist?
Yes, that plot twist.
Yeah, I'm sure they were winging it a little bit. But
will get it if you've gotten to that.
Oh yeah, they'll get it if they got it. But no, I did not see that one coming, and it was very good. But again, I'm liking it overall. I think it might be the case that because this is my first Bravely game, I'm not fully appreciating it as much as like Tyler did, because he's played Bravely in Endlayer. But I'm still enjoying it for what it's worth. I'm still glad I'm playing it. It's been fun. The sailing sleep mode game is a godsend. I mean, dear gosh, I've been getting like so many experience orbs and JP orbs. Like one time, Tyler, I get like 4 medium experience orbs, 2 large experience orbs, and I'm just like stockpiling them. And
nice.
Then when I get like 4 of each, I just like put one on each character just to level them up higher. And of course, I'm using the JP to get the better teams. So
I've
actually,
had this weird.
Go ahead.
I've had this weird thing with the JP orbs because I, with my Seth and my Adele, I mastered Freelancer, which gets you the JP up ability, so you start earning bonus JP.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
But I have an issue with, like, I try to do everything as optimally as possible, and I haven't mastered that class with the other two characters. So I keep giving Seth and Adele because they can get 1.7 times the amount of JP points from those orbs. I only give those two those orbs. So they've mastered like 10 classes, and the other two have mastered like 5. So there's a real discrepancy on my team progression.
Yeah, well, I am nowhere near that. I've stuck with just keeping them at 2 classes apiece, having them master that. So let's see, my Adele is Beastmaster and White Mage.
Oh, Beastmaster is so good.
It's so OP.
It's so busted.
The real complaint is that sometimes you don't know what you're gonna get when you capture the monster. Mm-hmm. So like you're expecting them all to be attack, and then like one of them is like trying to instill fear, one of them's trying to rally up your own party, and just like, I don't need this. I want you to attack. Like,
right.
Give me things to attack. So then my Elvis, who I will admit is not as annoying as the demo.
Thank you. I agree. I was gonna say that. Okay, this is my hot take, but it's not as hot take now. He's the best voice actor in the game.
Lies.
Yeah, no. First of all, I apologized to him without tagging him on Twitter, because why would I tag him? And he liked it, so he saw my tweet. He knows that I was talking smack to him, and then I apologized, so that's funny. But to me, he's the he gives that character real personality through that voice.
Anyway, so my Elvis is Black Mage, Red Mage. That way he's just like the ultimate elemental threat. My Gloria, I found extreme use in her being a White Mage and a Hunter, so because she has the counter move,
mm-hmm,
and so
that's
she's
a
like,
great one.
Yeah, so she can counter any counter, and it's great because she doesn't have the best stats, especially in the health department, but and she can counter any counter, and it makes it very useful. And then my Seth is Vanguard and currently Freelancer, because I'm trying to find that extra class to just make him better, and just haven't found it yet.
Yeah.
And I've got a lot of asterisks by now.
Freelancer is good, though. I mean,
I like Freelancer.
It's the first class, but it's good.
Yeah, I mean, I use Examine to make sure, and then I have, you know, Magnifying Glasses just in case, but then you just says Vanguard. He's so powerful with Neo Cross Slash and Sword of Stone, so he's doing, like, 5,000 damage every hit, and it's like, yeah, that'll whittle the bosses down.
Yeah.
So, the boss characters are good. I like them. They definitely feel powerful, which sometimes is something that RPGs don't do well. And again, I have not beaten the game. I will have my review up before I beat the game. But I think it'll be fine, because it's really more about the core of the story and the gameplay, which I know I have a good grasp on. Again, I like the story, mainly because it takes slightly atypical routes for certain things. Like, for example, this is a small spoiler. The goal is to get these crystals. You all should know that. You don't get them all right away. Like, you don't, like, face a boss and get the crystal. Sometimes you don't get that option. You get the power, but you don't get the crystal. And
yeah.
I like that, because, like, in Paper Mario, it's like, oh, you get all the star crystals and everything, and then, like, eventually they may get stolen from you. But here, it's like, no, we're going to take this crystal right away. So I like that they are doing certain twists with the storylines and characters and all that. And I do find certain depth in certain side characters that I like. Some are weird, like that pig character. Tough.
I know, yeah, Truff.
Truff, like what's that? That's just
I kind of like Truff. I don't know if I like him or I don't like him, but right now I think I kind of like Truff.
I refuse to. There's a point in that game, small spoiler. There's a point in the game where Truff is trying to help your crew move a tree. And he could chop it down with ease, and then he teaches Seth. And I'm like, dude, Elvis has magic. He could burn that freaking tree. Kidding me?
I want to start a forest fire. Come on.
I was like, oh, come on, man. Don't you like a little flame in your life? It's like, how about the way of sorcery? So, but overall, I'm enjoying the game. I look forward to finishing it. And my review will be up either tomorrow/Friday and or Saturday. So be on the lookout for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Tyler, since,
yeah, I guess I should.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, let's just combine these together and
yes,
for last.
Exactly. You can feel free to chime in whenever.
Oh, I will.
But so I will talk about the stuff that I'm really liking first, and that's still the amount of jobs and the amount of combinations that you can put together. The team composition element of the game, I think, is its strongest and most fun element. So I was heading in. So we won't spoil. I think let's call it chapter three. If you we'll go to spoilers up to chapter three. But I was fighting this boss that's a late game boss. I won't tell you who it was, but it was a late game boss. And I came up with this strategy for my Elvis. I wanted to make him a paladin. So I figured that like the Dungeons and Dragons paladin. So I gave him the Bastion class and the White Mage class. So he's a tanky lance fighter who can heal. He was really, really slow. That was the problem. But his other abilities from other classes that he had mastered included the magic point saver from Beastmaster, solar power from the White Mage, noble sacrifice from Oracle, unshakable will from Berserker, and revenge from the Red Mage. So each of these abilities, the MP saver allowed him to cast his magic at a lower price. He wasn't going to run out of magic points. Solar power regenerated his magic points. Noble sacrifice, when he gets knocked down, everybody else who's knocked out comes back to life. Unshakable will made him safe to status effects, and revenge, when he gets hit, he sometimes would get a brave point. So the strategy against this boss was to make sure that Elvis stayed alive at all costs, because if he got knocked down last, that meant everybody else would come back to life as sort of like a safety net situation. And I had my Seth doing the damage. I had my Gloria tanking and protecting. She was a shield master. She protected, just bodyguarded Elvis the entire fight. And Adele would provide backup heals. And fighting this boss, she has, so bosses in this game have counters, which we are, I think, torn on whether we like them or not, both of us really, because they add a challenge to the game, but they also can be frustrating. So this boss had a counter any damage. So if you damaged the boss, which you have to damage the boss, she would gain a brave point, which is infuriating because before you know it, she's got three brave points and is ready to unleash her ultimate attack. So I would, it was like a real balancing act of how do I keep my team alive while also dealing enough damage to her. So just a ton of different heals and a ton of close calls where Elvis would get right down to almost no health and then bring my whole team back to life. I ended up triumphing over this boss with like, it was a long battle. She ran out of magic points. That's how long it was. I literally tanked her out. And it was just, it was so fun to see it work because Elvis was always, my whole team would get wiped except for him. He would always have just enough health to survive. And I had set it up that way and it was great to see it work. So that's, you know, the best part of the game to me is when you have an idea, you put it to the test and then it actually works just as you planned. The things that I don't like are the story. So I agree with you, Todd, on the idea that the situations are fun. The story, like the first three chapters, each area has a self-contained story, basically. In Savalon, there's the political intrigue of what happened to the old king and Bernard's shady, you know, business dealings, and you're trying to get the water crystal back. And then in the next town, it's the, you know, this forest has grown and one of the characters' daughters has died. And like her, that kind of sadness looms over the whole area and you're trying to work through that grief. And then the next chapter is this political intrigue of like the Salem witch trial sort of deal. And I like each of those stories for what they are. Like they're fine. They're largely fine. But the connective tissue of the whole thing isn't really there. So in the very beginning of the game, you fight this guy, Adam, and he's this big bad. He's clearly like one of the big bads of the game. And his presence is just not felt elsewhere. Like he's just kind of gone from the game. And I feel like the story would be stronger. The overarching plot line would be stronger if we felt more threatened by him. If he made more appearances, if he was getting in our way of getting these crystals instead of just kind of, after each chapter, we get a cutscene with him at his base, like yucking it up with some minions. It's just a weaker. There's not an overarching thrust to push you through the game. And when you do eventually, like get into the later chapters, that kind of comes home where you're like, wait, I'm fighting this guy now, and this is it feels shallow, and their personalities don't feel real. So take Gladys from chapter 3, for example. She is the sword master, and you're supposed to like feel bad for her. She's like, her parents died and she thinks that fairies killed her parents, and that's why she is basically serving as the executioner at the Salem witch trial. She's trying to like catch people who she thinks are fairies and kill them. But we're told, oh, she's a really nice person underneath, though. She's got a good heart and she was always so sweet, and you know, this revenge thing has just really gotten to her. But we're never really shown that. Like, we're never really shown that sweet side of her. We don't get to see her parents die. We don't get to see why she even thinks fairies killed her parents. We're just told she thinks fairies killed her parents, and she's actually really nice. You fight her at the bottom of this den where she's having, like, people are, this was a good cutscene, but the characters, people she's trying, they force to jump into this Grand Canyon-like thing. And if they survive, if they are fairies, they'll grow wings and fly away. And if not, then we're told the Lord of Dragons will save them, but they're obviously just falling to their deaths and dying. You fight her in this canyon where the people's corpses are all like 10 feet below her. And she is too stupid to even look into the canyon to see, oh, look at all these people who are dead. Like, you fight her, and then Adele grabs her and is like, look at it. You see that there? Those people are dead. Like, she didn't look. She wasn't capable of looking. It just didn't make any sense. Like, logically, it was just a complete... you would have to be the stupidest person in the world to not be like, oh, I'm at this very thin cliff. I'm going to look down into the canyon and see what's at the bottom. It just... It was a terrible, terrible scene. And that somehow, like, makes her realize what she did was wrong. And... her like redemption arc is supposed to be underway, and she ends up getting killed, and the game wants you to feel bad for her because she was just about to do the right thing. But it feels so shallow because the game falls into the classic tell but not show situation. And I think that that's kind of true for a lot of the characters. They're all pretty bland. There's a few that I like. I think Roddy is pretty fun in Wizwald. He's like Elvis's friend. And the best character is Vigintio. He is this like weird undead creature who you'll meet in chapter 4, and I won't spoil his story.
Spoilers, I haven't gotten that far.
Well, sure. I just told you a name of a character and that's it. But he's very interesting because he has a personal motivation, and even though it's not like a phenomenal, he's not a super deep character, he's fun. He has personality. And a lot of the characters don't. Now, unfortunately, that's the thing with your party. Your main cast, they're all there. Like, the Bravely games have a tradition of the third and fourth party members being the most fun. Adia Lee is one of my favorite characters of all time. She's in both Bravely Default and Bravely Second, and she's great. She's got this, like, high energy. She's got a interesting personal motivation. She's, like, she's told one thing growing up, and then she finds out that it was a lie, and she has to work through that, and her coming to terms with like the grayness of the world is interesting, and it's fun to see her grow that way. In this game, I think Adele and Elvis are the two clearly more interesting characters, and Elvis, I think his voice actor, like I said, actually brings a lot of character to him, but he clearly is this guy who he's older than the rest of the party. He's a scholar. He loves to party. He's a character that you could kind of relate to. And even though his journey isn't front and center, he's not the greatest character. Don't get me wrong. They could do much more with like showing his personal motivation. There's something to him. And the same kind of goes for Adele. I think her voice actress is great. She did all the voice cast, I think, is actually pretty good. But she has some layers to her that, in chapter 3, I guess we said we can spoil this stuff. Like, she is a fairy, and you didn't really know that she was going to be a fairy, but she is, and that in the context of the series, it's interesting because fairies are generally the bad guys, generally. So that adds some intrigue with her. But Seth and Gloria are, especially Seth, but Gloria too, are just, they're so bland, and they just don't have internal motivation. You need motivation to make an interesting character. And like, what is Seth's motivation?
Yeah.
What is Seth's motivation?
He's just there.
He's just there. And Gloria, like, you know, her motivation is to get the crystals, but they just don't really do anything. Like, there's not something super interesting about that. Like, the crystals are just these objects that she needs to get the crystals, and like, they don't do anything with it. That's pretty much it. That's the depth of her character. There's one scene, again, no, I won't spoil it, but there's one side quest later in the game between Seth and Gloria that I'm like, if there was more of this in this game, I would love this cast so much more, because they actually had an interesting cutscene where they revealed stuff about themselves. They started to feel more real. But for the most part, and they just don't do it enough. They're just very, very bland. And I feel that way for most of the characters. And that's, to me, why I'm a little bit lower on this game than I was last week. There's not a thrust to keep the game moving.
Mm.
By the 50th hour, I was like, I'm ready for this to be over. I feel like I've seen it. I feel like I've done it.
Well,
like,
by the 50th hour of gameplay, I was done.
Yeah, I mean, it was, if that's a long game, and if it ended right then, I would have been like, this was really, really great. But there was, for me, I'm on my 95th hour, and I've just gotten one of the endings, and like, the next 45 hours were just like going from dungeon to dungeon, and the dungeons are fine, but they're not unique. None of them really are special looking. There's nothing that you're like, whoa, I can't wait to see what the next dungeon looks like. You kind of know what the dungeons are going to look like. And I wish that, you know, if there was more visual character to the dungeons, that would provide more of a thrust. If the story was more engaging, that would be a thrust. Instead, I'm still liking the game because I love the combat and I love the character creations and I love that moment against the boss that my plan just worked and it was great to see it work. But I feel like the game has a momentum issue. There's not enough thrust to justify the length. The story is, and the characters and the world even are just, they're just a little too bland. So yeah, that's a super long-winded way of saying I am enjoying the game. I wish it was shorter and I wish the story was better.
It sounds to me like, yeah, and the way you describe it is kind of like it's just imbalanced in a sense, because again, like, the combat system is definitely one of the main appeals of, again, the Brave system ever since from the first game is like, that's its main appeal. I mean, unfortunately, we're going to like the story itself. Again, it is like very Final Fantasy light versus dark typical story. That's, I mean, again, it's a old tale, but again, it's how they present it. And it seems to me that this kind of, the way they present the tale is just like, yeah, there's nothing new and didn't really like change enough to make a fresher take on the old tale, basically.
Yeah, and it's disorganized. The first Bravely Default, that game's story was tremendous. It was tremendous. I really don't even remember Bravely Second, so I don't think it was as good, but the first Bravely Default story was excellent. There's a great, great, great plot twist. And even though like the way the game's endings were created, it was kind of a botched execution. I think the true ending and the bad ending should have been flipped, like what you had to do to get to those endings. Anyway, if you've played it, you know what I'm talking about. But it was a great story and it was really like a twisty, turny journey. This one, I just got to like one major twist that was kind of cool. But it was only kind of cool. Like, I'm hoping that there's more. Bravely Default always does weird stuff with his games. So, like, in Bravely Second, to beat the game, like, you fail at the end of the game, and then you could just start the game from the beginning again. But to actually get to the true ending, you have to, like, press the start button at the first cutscene to use the Bravely Second, like, combat feature to have your characters like break the fourth wall and like tear through time and come back. There's always some weird thing like that, and this game has that too, but it hasn't. I don't know, the first game, the way they did it was better.
There's
always that problem of trying to mimic or improve upon something that was great before. We've seen it at multiple franchises. I do want to give one thing to the story though. They're not afraid to get dark.
Like, no,
there's some creepy things in here, including Tyler's aforementioned sacrifice to the dragons, and my personal favorite, as well, spoiler, there's a girl who calls herself an artist, and
horrible. I was so glad I beat her on my first try. I did not want to lose to her.
I beat her on my first try,
but she was so evil.
Yeah, she, let's just, I'll ballpark her for you. There's a magical community called Wiswold. She found a way to control people through paint. And what she did was she manipulated like three of the most powerful and, you know, vulnerable people in the whole city by making a horrifying fake painting of a child they had lost, a daughter and someone who was over her. Oh, but it gets worse. They thought that she had died in an accident. And so they got these paintings, and the paintings would talk in the voice of the girl that had died and basically mesmerized them into thinking that they were doing her bidding. And then it turns out that the reason that all of this is going on was because the girl wanted more vibrant colors of paint to use in a masterpiece, hashtag monster, and she killed the kid to make it possible to mesmerize these adults just so she could get better paint. And there's still more. The red paint she used was human blood.
It kind of reminds me of the storyline of a Full Metal Alchemist. We're going to ditch the famed Nina episode,
or the Philosopher's Stone, because that was the power of human souls.
Was so jacked. Like, a lot of the bosses are evil. She was like so evil, and that was a tough fight. Like, I almost lost, and I was like, I do not want to lose to her because I don't want to hear her talk smack to my team after she wins. But we close out. Who's your favorite character in the game, Todd?
Oh, that's tough. I do like Adele, especially now with her fairy revelation.
Yeah, she's charming.
She I like how she puts Elvis in his place.
Yeah,
and she's a joy to be around. I kind of like the mini dragon whose name escapes me.
Yeah, Gwillem.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, why didn't you tell us that earlier? I was trying to, and then I, you know, kind of liked it in this pouch you put me in, so I might have, you know, took a nap. It's just like, oh, adorable mini dragon, why aren't you real? You know, I kind of, now that you're like, you actually talked about, you know, all the characters for so long, I don't really have a favorite because they all stand out in their own ways, and yet, like with Seth and Gloria, they don't really stand out at all. The villains at times stand out, like the artist girl, like is so evil.
The Asterix soldiers are good. I do like that. I like Orpheus. The bard was pretty good.
Yeah, the bard. Oh, he was so annoying.
I'm sure you don't like him as much because he's a pain in the ass.
It was just like, dude, shut up. So if there's one thing I can't stand as a person that just talks endlessly. Just
well, here. That's a bard for you. Of course, they come in.
Hey, there have been good bards. Okay, like what was it, Bastion from Fire Emblem?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a great bard, but I don't really have a character that sticks out to me like an Ike. Or
my favorite character is Lady Emma. Lady Emma is, I wish that there was more Lady Emma. She's really interesting. There's something mysterious about her. Like, her age is all over the place. She's Elvis's mentor.
Yeah, I've only seen her a few times, so I guess it just hasn't resonated with me.
She's not in it a lot, but like, Elvis like admires her so much, and it's interesting. She has a visual style to her that I appreciate too, like the black mage hat, and like, she's mysterious. There's something about that character. I wish we knew more about her, and I wish she was on the story more.
But yeah, anyway, so look forward to my review. It'll be coming out on Friday or Saturday, depending on the time I have, and I'm just going to let you know it will be getting a good score, unless something happens in Chapter 4 and I'm just like, screw this game! But I don't think it will.
Let me prepare you for the boss of Chapter 4, because I lost to that guy one time after annihilating. I was cleaning him up, and then he does something that is absolutely just cheap, and it was infuriating. So
was it a counter?
If you want me to help you, I will. No, it's just an attack. He uses one attack at the very end of the fight, and you have to survive it.
Sounds like
Dominic. I thought it was a forced ending. I thought it was like you have to lose because of what this attack was. It was super
like with Galahad the first time.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So I will let you know when I get close to Chapter 4. I'm still in Chapter 3 right now, but so moving on. Oh, I'm just kidding. Will, how about you? What have you been playing?
Well, your prince. Pretty much since you two have pretty much took up a lot of time, basically. Honestly, it's really nothing much has changed since this month. Again, we don't really have new games to play right now. I'm still continuing on with Persona 5 Strikers. Almost going to be finished up with the second dungeon with Yusuke. So going to be doing that. Of course, naturally playing with Rue of Fae, which, yeah, again, we just got ourselves the dual ninja hero, which, oh boy, yeah, get ready for those Aether raids. It's going to be much more tougher. And I'm just looking through like these build videos, and the disarm traps that's on, like, I think it's only on 3 units right now. Apparently, it's a very good skill to inherit to Ninja Lin. So I'm just trying to dang it. But yeah, overall, just getting rid, just again grinding on my orbs. I'm pretty much gonna be like after this I think probably a week I'll probably will be up to 400 orbs, and then naturally I'm just waiting for yeah, the next Mythic Hero, which I think is gonna be coming out roughly in the middle of the I think end of the month, middle or end of the month, granted. And of course naturally with a Hero Rise banner, which in case you want to go try to get Seros, there's your chance if you want to use spent orbs. But yeah, just as usual, just grinding orbs and Faye. And again, just what? Come on! I know they said they is gonna be the Choose Your Legends. It's gonna be coming at the end of during the summer. But come on, can it be any more sooner, please?
No. You must suffer.
But I digress. Again, I want to see how to get to put Gatekeeper. That's what I want to see. I'm gonna just like splurge all my orbs on that.
Yeah.
But I digress. But yeah, so overall, just been basically on Faye and personal five struggles. And if there's anything like this coming month, is because honestly, I'm just waiting for Monster Hunter Rise to actually try out. That's the only thing that seems to
say about that one.
Mm-mm. Like, because I guess we'll talk about it later on in the podcast, but there was a bit of a direct presentation of Monster Hunter Rise where they showed a bit more of Monster Hunter Stories and Monster Hunter Rise, and which I think there is going to be an updated demo by tomorrow. I don't know when, I forgot the date, but there is going to be an updated demo as well as like just some basically add-ons. So that's what I want to try. And of course, again, it's Monster Hunter. I'm very curious. I want to just like try to get back into it. Plus, of course, the three amiibos. So there's that. So I don't know. I just do feel like there's something once I finish up with Persona 5 Strikers. I know there's a lot of games, a lot of my backlog, but I really want to try Monster Hunter Rise. So maybe get back on the train.
Cool. Oh yeah, and with Faye, I have all the new Fodlan characters.
I was able to get them all.
Although I got him in hilarious circumstances. Oh. I got Lionheart when he was a 4-star for whatever reason. Then I got I think I got Ingrid next.
Okay,
then
okay,
I summoned
okay.
Dedu with my 40th summon, and then I decided to stop summoning because for whatever reason I was just not getting another 5-star after I got Ingrid, and so I was like a 4.25%, and then so I started doing the Forged Bonds, and on my second ticket I got Marianne, and I'm like, oh, there you go. so now I have like 300 orbs or so that I'm saving for the remainder, whatever that may be.
Yeah, like the dude is very broken, like especially that saving, like ever since they introduced them in the Valentine's Asgard family, that save skill is very useful.
Oh, has anyone played a Pyramithra?
No, I'm embarrassed. I still have.
Again, the last time I touched it was the last time we talked about it last week. So
same. Yeah. It's like I'm not getting the banner. I'm not getting the fighter pack until later. So you guys got it. You guys got to beat my eyes, ears, and Smash Brothers thumbs.
If you want to go as a recap, yes, Pyra is very fun to play with, and of course, Natural Mithra is just again if you want to be more technical, like what more than say.
I've seen that Foresight is broken. That's
it is very useful. Again, very very similar to Bayonetta's counter, but overall, again, those two characters are so much fun to play with. Yes.
Okay. So with that, we will head to news. It's been a little bit of a lighter week, but we got some fun things to talk about. So it's time to go down the warp pipe. First off, Pokemon, because of course we're not done talking about that. So, March 5th was the release of the fourth part of Pokemon Journeys, which is apparently the last part before the rebrand, I guess. Learn how to phrase things, Netflix. It's not the final episodes, it's just the last of this part. So, the first episode, they did a really smart thing. They did the Alola episode, Ash returning to Alola region for the first time since he won their championship. I was looking so forward to this episode. You already see where this is going. I didn't like it. They rushed everything that I wanted to see, including Ash meeting his little brother in Lay. All right. They even have Kukui say welcome home to Ash, and I started to cry. And then Burnett was there, and she called him big brother, and she held out Lee. And Ash had a very vulnerable moment where he's like looking at his little brother, and I'm like starting to cry again. And then all of a sudden, it's all about Go. It's like Go was getting challenged by dang it, I lost his name. he was challenged by one of the former Alola companions to say, "Are you Ash's rival? I must challenge you to see if you're worthy." I'm like, dude, calm the heck down. And then they do a Pokemon battle, and Go's like, I'm not his rival, I'm his friend, his research fellow, and blah, blah, blah. And Yahweh is something totally different. And
yeah,
not
I was about to say.
Kiawe, there we go. Kiawe, that was it. And this is like, I wanted this to be Ash's reunion special. You know, this should have been two parts. And instead they just focused on Go, and they barely had time with Kakui and Burnett. I'm like, this is what we wanted to see! Okay, Go has one purpose, to catch all the Pokemon. We don't need him to have certain rivalries with former Ash companions. Like, stop it! This is supposed to be about Ash meeting his little brother. It was 10 seconds long. Monsters! Can you see I'm emotional about this? So, but I will be reviewing that over the next month after I watch the full season, or part of the season, I suppose. It's still very fun, and the battles are still incredible, but we shall see how it goes. This is something Will showed me. They're doing a special Pokemon shorts. It's like less than 20 seconds or whatever, but they have one with the Galar starters and Pikachu about keeping a beat. And it's infinitely adorable. And you know what it makes me want? It makes me want the Pokatoons back. Remember that Pokatoons thing?
Oh, man, the Pokemon jukebox back in the day.
No, not that. Pokatoons. Remember that one episode with Scrafty and Mimikyu? Like, it was like the Looney Tunes thing?
Okay. The old classic style cartoons.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
right.
They trademarked that after it got a big response. We haven't seen anything since, and this would be like the perfect time with the Pokemon 25th anniversary. So
that would be nice to see that style again. Good point.
And if they need ideas, I'm available. I won't charge that much. So
yeah, like that short is like, even in the description, like, yeah, everyone just doing the big Grookey, and just like Sabo just doing his best, which again, I will forever be a Sabo gay. Screw you two. But yeah, I like just seeing Sabo just doing his best. Forever support.
All right. And next up, this one's interesting. Japan released its list of top 35 best selling Switch games so far as of 4 years. And the top game is kind of surprising. It's Animal Crossing. Now, when I say it's Animal Crossing New Horizons, I don't just mean like it just happened to get the top spot, or it won by a narrow margin. No, it beat out the number two by 2.5 million. And the number two is Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. Yeah. And remember, Smash Bros. Has been out for years. Animal Crossing hasn't been out for a year. So, yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's... I mean, Animal Crossing is just that big behemoth of a game that's... Again, it's like, many people just are that on the casual side of things. And of course, it can't be over, like, I know I'm beating a dead horse, but again, with this whole year being, yeah, just a whole lockdown period, like, yeah, what are the games going to be? Aside from, like, the old big Triple A games like Final Fantasy VII Remake and everything else.
So here's some of the other thing. Here's some of the other of the top 35, and this is where it gets really interesting for with the numbers. So like I said, Animal Crossing is at the top with 6.6 million. Ultimate is number two with 4.1 million. Pokemon Sword and Shield is third with 3.9. Splatoon 3.7. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe 3.6, Ring Fit Adventure 2.3, Mario Odyssey 2.2, Mario Party 1.8, notice the drop is going down, Minecraft 1.8, why, the world may never know. Breath of the Wild 1.7, I find that fascinating. I thought that would have sold more in Japan. Kirby Star Allies, 878,000, so we went from millions to thousands. Let's just drop down. Mario All-Stars, 555,000. 1-2 Switch, 483,000. Fire Emblem Three Houses, 323,000. Origami King, 305,000. Link's Awakening at number 34, 300,000. So, the difference between 1 and 34 and 35 is rather significant.
I'm very surprised that Mario Odyssey was, what, 6th on that list? I would have expected that to do a little bit better.
7. It was 7.
Yeah. Mario Kart was, what, 5th? 4th?
5th.
Yeah. I mean, Mario Kart, it's the number one selling game by, I think, a decent amount overall, right? So.
I just, what gets me about this, and I know I've heard this for, like, years, but the buying rates in Japan. Like, I know they're more of a mobile nation now, especially with their gacha games. But, you know, you see something like Animal Crossing, it's like, yeah, okay, I can see that. That sold, you know, 6 million there. But then you get to, like, the other games that have done, like, so well in other countries, like 3D All-Stars or Fire Emblem. Like, you'd think Fire Emblem was kept alive because of Japan, and yet Three Houses, arguably the best of the titles, only sold 323,000 there? Like, really?
Like, I guess, I mean, in that, and for that game of Three Houses, because I think Nintendo and the Nintendo system, like, knew, like, the, like, how much it's gonna be, which is the better place to sell it. I mean, yeah, of course, Japan is pretty much the place that is keeping Fire Emblem alive and well, but again, that's in their territory. While, again, with the rest of the world, like, of course, like, here in the West, like, people are buying Three Houses, like, when it first came out, and ever since then, just basically helps spur on the great sales of Three Houses that we come to know now. So, I guess it's kind of like product research in a sense. Like, they knew that the West was gonna, like, really help bring it up, so they didn't have to worry too much on the Japanese side market, I think.
Yeah, I wonder if people in Japan right now are having this conversation of, man, Fire Emblem was great until the Americans came and ruined it.
But see, I don't buy that, because especially once it, like, hit that awakening period, it got even more Japanese. I mean, with, like, the romance system.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, the tree house where you could, like, you know, touch your wife.
That was so weird.
That was so weird.
Like, and... I'm sorry. I will have a, I know it's a big can of worms on that part, on Fates and all that, but I'm still a little bit irked they've removed that. I'm sorry.
Of course you are. Of course you are. Of course! Anyway, and then, like, and even Three Houses, like, that feels like a Japanese-style thing with, like, the school, and, you know, yeah, it's Hogwarts, but with, you know, Fire Emblem, but still, like, you'd think, like, that would have been, like, one of their best-selling titles, but it's not even close. And that just boggles my mind. So, just goes to show you nobody, absolutely nobody, understands Japan. Moving on. So, I made a joke about Japan the other day with my wrestling friends. We were talking about a Japanese wrestler who had came over to AEW for matches.
Okay,
and I love the Japanese Joshis. They are absolutely incredible. And but there was this one wrestler who has this very distinct, like, pop princess yet evil gimmick. And this guy was like, I just don't get it. And I'm like, yeah, Japan's pretty hardcore. Just look at their anime.
And again, the wrestling scene in Japan is also pretty unique themselves as well. So yes.
And yet they have some of the best wrestlers in the world. So I don't judge much. Moving on. So Death Battle. Yeah. Season 8 came. And the first battle between King Mickey and Yoda arrived. And it was awesome. I highly recommend it. We have the link up on our site if you want to check it out. I was wrong in my prediction.
Oh,
yeah, I picked Yoda. Spoilers. But in my defense, Kingdom Hearts nuts. All right, because I based all of my stats on my knowledge of Kingdom Hearts 1 through, like, Dream Drop Distance. And apparently in Kingdom Hearts 3, there was a massively faster than light feat about a heart.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A heart,
yes, yes,
I want to quote this, a heart traveling between galaxies within the amount of seconds, which is apparently 400,000 times the speed of light. What?
Yeah, that did happen in Kingdom Hearts 3, and yeah. It's just, yeah, like, if there's anything else, yeah, like, the Force is very strong. Star Wars universe and lore has always been a very strong universe in itself, but when it comes to Kingdom Hearts and anime, or just any of the anime-based things of, like, Kingdom Hearts, yeah, don't bother, because crazy anime stunts will always trump everything else.
It's like, because seriously, they did a death battle about Obi-Wan Kenobi, And they made a note about a feat where he's compared to a Jedi that can move a black hole with his hand. And that stat was 14 petatons of energy, which is massive. All right, that's like a bunch of zeros. And I'm like, okay, there's no way Mickey, even with Kingdom Hearts powers, has that much power. Oh, I was wrong. Because they compared him to Zeus, an all god who can move stars. And he goes, oh, well, Mickey's more powerful than Zeus because of this, that, and the other thing. I'm like, ah, suck. And of course, that's Kingdom Hearts 3, which I didn't get to play because they didn't bring it to Switch like they're supposed to. So, yeah, I was a little mad. Un poco.
the fight itself, definitely give props to the CG animations and all that. That's definitely good to the team. And just like I gotta give, yeah, Mickey's VA definitely captures that spirit of Mickey. And like again, the banter was great. Like, yeah, like let's short like I can't speak Yoda, so I'm sorry, but yeah, just like the banter, and then just like I definitely was laughing a little bit when Yoda's beating Mickey with a stick, with like beating with a stick. Sorry.
Difficult to find, you are. A king, you must be. And defeat me, you must be a master.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll accept all of your voice acting gigs. So, but yeah, the next battle, which I'm curious about this, your thoughts on this one, Will. We got Shadow the Hedgehog versus Ryuko from Kill la Kill.
Yeah, that I mean, we already know. Like again, Shadow lost it to Vegeta back in the
And
days.
Mewtwo.
Yep. So like, Shadow definitely has a disadvantage, but with facing off against Ryuk Matoy, like if anyone has seen Kill la Kill, Kill la Kill is crazy. Again, made from the from Studio Trigger, and they are crazy as heck. But I mean, unfortunately, I haven't seen Kill la Kill, but I know about some of the crazy feats that Ryuk and of course the just yeah Satsuki. It's a crazy universe in the Kill la Kill world. So like, it's gonna be an interesting battle. But again, like with the track record of Shadow has, and of course with that limit of can only sustain a Super Shadow for so long. Yeah, I'm not holding my breath for Shadow.
I know it's funny because I do my YouTube show Todd Talk, and everyone's telling me that Shadow has this in the back because he can use Chaos Control to stop time, which Ryuko can't counter. And apparently, she has a limit to her power before she like bleeds out or something like that.
Right. Like we're going to the fibers, yeah, with what she
Yeah.
wears. Yes, yes, yes,
So
yes.
we shall see. And then Tyler, they've already announced the death battle after that, and I think it's going to interest you because it's Wanda versus Vision. Kidding.
That would be interesting. That would
No, I kid. That would be hilarious, but no, I don't, they're not going to do that.
fun.
One can dream. But all right, next up we have. Oh, there was a new TMNT game announced, Shredder's Revenge, and it's done by Tribute Games, who did Scott Pilgrim, right?
Yes, they did, and they also the team who worked on Streets of Rage is helping as well.
Oh, there you go. Streets of Rage 4, right?
Yes.
Yes,
Okay.
number 4, yeah.
So that game technically hasn't been announced for Switch, but like everyone's assuming it's going to be for Switch because it's very retro style, where like all the good TMNT games of the past was. So something to keep your eye out on, and a lot of people on our Outer Haven is looking forward to this.
Yeah, like I unfortunately haven't played Streets of Rage 4. I'm sorry. Yes, but yeah, like the way they presented this, obviously full of nostalgia, which again always props, of course, with that iconic tune. And basically, from what I've seen from the consensus of the internet, is that this is basically Turtles in Time without Konami, which again, Konami has not been doing anything with their
Konami is
IPs.
evil.
Yeah, so and like that ending with the surfing, and of course with that Fame Dome, Eyeball Dome, like, oh man, I haven't seen that thing in a long time. So yeah, obviously hits you in nostalgia, and the gameplay sprites, each turtle has their own separate running animations. Like that is good detail. That is good detail. And again, these are the people who sprouts, yes, Streets of Rage 4, Scott Pilgrim, very renowned in their beat 'em up genres. So yeah, definitely in good hands. Definitely in good hands.
So did we get a release date on that? I don't. I mean, I
It, there
assume
was
it's this
no
year.
release date. There
No
was no
release date.
release
Yeah,
date
I don't
shown on the
believe
trailer.
so.
Darn. But stay tuned for that because we'll definitely be reporting on it. And
Turtles in Time is a really, really fun game. That's
yes,
a classic title. My buddy Captain Toad Taylor, a friend of the show, is ecstatic for this one because we played that game quite a bit growing up.
And it seems to be like here, yeah, like Turtles of Time, you only can play as only two players. Here, you can it's the full on four turtles. So that
Ooh.
thing, it seems very like exciting for me. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. I like it. All right, and then finally, we'll take this one over. There was a Monster Hunter Direct. Take it away.
So yes, earlier in the week, there was a Monster Direct basically showing off more details in regards to Monster Hunter Stories and, of course, naturally, Monster Hunter Rise. So what they also showed off is also, I think, yeah, right now at the time of recording at March 11th, there is an updated demo for Monster Hunter Rise, which actually can face the poster monster of this game, which is the Magma Mallow. So if you want to go and try out and face up this new poster boss, then yeah, that I think is currently out right now on Switch. And also, if I remember correctly, like if I re recall, is that the game will be also coming to PC down the lines. So obviously, right now is for the Switch, and later on would be ported to PC. In regards to Monster Hunter Stories, naturally they show off more details regarding the story, as well as three new amiibos. Aside from like the Raphalos one, I think they also showed off three more separate amiibos. Yeah, something of that sort. But basically showed off more details on Monster Stories, stuff that I so but I'm not really too interested in it, so don't really caught the finer details. But overall, yeah, there's definitely a lot of good things going to Monster Story and Rise. And they also showed off in the trailer for Monster Rise is that they will be continuing to update the game like with like Monster World. And what they showed off is Camilos, which I think is definitely one of the more classic monsters in the series. Forgive me, Monster fans, I'm not too renowned, I'm sorry. But yeah, just like seeing all these like monsters going back again, like if they're gonna continue on with these updates, future updates down the line after release, then I think they're looking at another good evergreen title from Capcom for the Switch. So overall, like if you're a Monster Hunter fan, definitely keep an eye on this game once it comes out at the end on March 26th, so roughly in 2 weeks' time. And yeah, just get ready to hunt back again. So again, right now there is an updated demo with the Magma Mallow. Definitely go and get your hunt on while you can.
All right, and now we head to our main event. In light of our, let's talk about this happening. On our Discord server, multiple members of us have played Bravely Default 2, and one member had pulled a Tyler and got the game and hasn't played it yet because he forgot he had the game. It wasn't Tyler, obviously. This time, Tyler, you're off the hook. But someone else did, and one of our members' brothers played it, and he says he didn't like the game because of the counter system and certain things in the gameplay and the story and blah blah blah. And I don't like the counter system at all because of just how angering it can get, especially when you're really close to a boss fight, then their counters just crank themselves up. But so we're gonna look at something different tonight. We're gonna look at times when Nintendo and their developers failed to make good gameplay impacts. So it's time to look at things Nintendo got wrong. And I'll start to kind of get this ball rolling. And that's the Paper Mario franchise. Now, we've talked about this in depth, and I will talk about it to death until they freaking fix it. Because when they did the first Paper Mario game, it was pure RPG bliss. It was great. It was original story, original take on things. It was a spiritual successor to The Legend of the Seven Stars, and we all loved it. Then they made Thousand Year Door, one of the greatest RPGs ever made. Great story, great characters, improved battle system, and so on. Then they did Super Paper Mario, which embraced the original roots of the Mario franchise, and I allowed it because, it was fun enough, and they used like the Wiimote to go 2D to 3D and blah, blah, blah. And then everything after that was just why? Like, why did you do this? Why did you make it like this? Like, Sticker Star removed everything that was great about Thousand Year Door, and it was like, hey, let's throw stickers in there. No, you don't need companions. Why would you want to do that? And then there was Color Splash and Paper Jam, and I know Tyler liked Origami King, good on him. But overall, like, the fans have been begging for the franchise to go back to its RPG roots. And yet the producer behind the games, like almost like no thumb on nose and making fun of the gamers, are like, well, it's my mission to make sure every game feels different, so we're not stagnant, so we're not, just spinning our wheels. And I'm like, there's ways to do that while still keeping the core of the franchise that the fans love. It shouldn't be that hard. And yet every time, and granted, yes, Origami King has done well. I will not deny that. But it's the first in a long line, and I would honestly argue that it's more about the Switch doing well than the franchise doing well, because the reviews of Origami King are very middling. So, and people are still crying out for, you know, Thousand Year Door Part 2, including myself.
It's kind of funny enough because actually we just got off from the anniversary. I think like it's almost like 26 years since the original Super Mario RPG came out. I think the Sakurai did a celebration image with Smash Brothers. I think 2 days ago or yesterday.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah,
that was
right.
Yeah. Stop making me feel old, Will. Just. But I haven't played Paper Mario since Sticker Star because I didn't get Paper Jam for like one reason or another. I don't remember. Color Splash just didn't interest me. By the time I got to Origami King, I was just like, yeah, I'm done. So if they want to come get me back and get a whole bunch of fans back, they need to go back to the RPG system. And they can't use the excuse that, oh, we already have a Mario RPG. No, you don't. You haven't done the Mario & Luigi franchise for a while, and that one hasn't been as relevant either because that game spun its wheels with its battle system and its story and everything. Even though Bowser's Inside Story was great. Like, that was their peak, and then they kind of lost traction after that, and then they did like the reboots, and like those didn't do as well because of course they didn't. And it's just like, we want the original Paper Mario style. Okay, you experimented, good on you, go back to what made it work. And what really makes me mad is that they're willing to experiment on a franchise that no one wants to experiment on, and yet they won't go to these other franchises and we're like, yeah, go ahead and experiment them on it. Like, nah, let's not do that. Let's keep screwing up Paper Mario. Like, why don't you go and experiment with F-Zero? Go experiment with Donkey Kong. Go experiment with Golden Sun or Ice Climbers or Star... Okay, not Star Fox. We all saw what happened with Zero. But, you know, there are times when improving the formula needs to happen. It needs to happen. If that didn't happen, we wouldn't have gotten Metroid Prime. If that didn't happen, we wouldn't have gotten... Oh, what's a good example? Smash Brothers. Oh, Fire Emblem. Like, they've grown Fire Emblem very much over the last however many... And Three Houses, that's a great example. They did a more open-world element with Garen Mok and everything, and having it be more of a, you know, building up your team system versus just raising their stats. You know, that was a good experiment, and that works, so they can build upon that. Paper Mario, you tried that so many times, and you failed so many times! Damn it! Stop it, go back to what works a Thousand Year Door, and just let it breathe, let it be itself again. You can still improve it! You can still make good additions to it, and still keep the RPG core, and the companions core, and everything else. But you're not, because you think, oh, we have to make everything different. No, you don't! You know how many franchises out there are the freaking same?! Look at Call of Duty! The biggest thing that thing did was add a little Battle Royale mode. And you know what happened when they did that? They wanted the single player back. So stop it! Stop it!
I agree with you, of course, that the original Paper Marios were by far the best.
Yes, 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 yes.
But to me, like, would I love, capital L, love an old school revival? Absolutely, I would kill for that. But I think what matters most to the Paper Mario series is that the gameplay has to just be good. Like, Super Paper Mario was nothing like the original games. And it was good.
Right,
it was a worthy entry into the series. So I don't necessarily mind them mixing the gameplay up, but what they did in Sticker Star and Color Splash was just... It was the number one thing you don't want in a game, and it was boring. It was just an unfun gameplay style.
Yeah, the entire Nintendo fanbase more or less got it covered. It's just I definitely love Super Paper Mario because again, it was like a little different ever since that after from the Thousand Year Door, but it feels like there is something new to offer. I mean, yes, there is the platform, but also a little bit of the RPG that we all know and love, and Super Paper Mario, I mean, I totally enjoyed it. So, but with these like later entries, it's just like something was lost in transition that this isn't the RPG. This is, again, Sticker Star, all these things, the add-ons, it's like it is something, but there's just something missing from it. Like that, like this is a Super Mario RPG that, yeah, this is worthy of an RPG, but this isn't RPG. I know that's kind of confusing, but basically, like, there is just something that's lost in transition that, like, yeah, with Color Splash and all that, I mean, it's more action-based. It's not that same turn-based that we all, that many people have been requesting over these years. And just something that's, it's not there anymore. Like, yeah, like, that's something, there's an essence that was present in Thousand Year Door, in Paper Mario, and Super Paper Mario, that's just no longer there in the later games.
Yeah, and for those thinking, well, Todd, you still like the games overall. No, it's not about that. There are things that I found interesting. Like, for example, when Origami King was first announced, I like the idea of Origami as the enemy. You know, that was visually fun. And, like, some of the puzzle-solving elements with, like, the thousand folds or whatever, or the thousand fold arms, you know, that was a cool extension, not unlike a thousand-year door where Mario could transform himself into various, you know, paper airplanes and model ships and, you know, walk through walls and all that. You know, that was just an extension of the paper, and I dug that. But then they just completely revamped the battle system because they said they could. It's like, yeah, we can do this, so we're going to. Why? You could have easily kept the RPG system and then added origami elements to yourself, to your companion characters, and had a whole bunch of fun. But you didn't do that because you're like, no, we have to. We have to have a new battle system. No, you don't. Look how long it took Final Fantasy to improve. All right, and even still, they still do the RPG, even in Remake. They just mix the RPG with real-time strategy elements. And that's fine, and that was fun, and that sold well. You know, had nothing to do with the models for Tifa and Aerith. Not at all, right, Will? So, Paper Mario, we want it back. The fans want it back. And this is one of those frustrating things of Nintendo. They just don't listen. This is one of the rare times where, like, oh, no, we don't need to listen to you because we know better. Do you? Are you sure? Because I recall Paper Mario, Thousand Year Door, being hailed as one of the greatest RPGs of all time, and not happening with Origami King. Didn't happen with Color Splash. That was one of the worst-selling games on the Wii U. So
yeah, it's hard to even call Origami King an RPG. I mean,
yeah, it's not.
I very mean, limited RPG. Like, yeah, hardly any RPG mechanics.
Yeah, it's like RPG elements. it's like, oh, this has an RPG element to it, but it's not an RPG.
Yeah.
Is there strategy? Yes. Is there certain things you can use to, you know, help your battles? Yes. But it's more about puzzle solving and being able to do certain things within a certain amount of moves. That's puzzles, not RPGs.
Yeah, it's really more a puzzle game than anything else.
No. So I will stop now because I've made this rant before, but it was perfect for this topic. So fix Paper Mario. Do it now. Make it so. All right, Will, what about you? What do you hate about Skies of Arcadia? I'm kidding. I stole Tyler's joke.
I just kind of like was looking through the library of Nintendo's past. I mean, yeah, you pretty much nailed it on the head with Paper Mario. And I guess this is not another new debate, but if there's one thing that's like was completely wrecked at the battle system, it would be probably Star Fox Zero, if anything else. So I'm just deciding to re-examine this case and why this game is just so, like, just really panned because of its motion control and all that, and then basically the revamped battle system. I mean, granted, when I played it on the Wii, when I first got it, I mean, it was okay. If anything else, it definitely served its purpose of, like, yeah, using the dual screen from the TV to your Wii U gamepad. That thing was, like, okay, it was good. But at the same time, the main criticisms, like, again, the forced motion controls of using both things, and, of course, like, using the Wii U gamepad to angle your shots is just, like, it definitely takes a lot of you, definitely divides your attention, because, like, yeah, you need to go flying and go shooting. It's like, yeah, like, this is the Star Fox that, again, from Star Fox 4 to Star Fox Assault, and heck, even to some extent to Star Fox Adventure, like, yeah, there's just something very tried and true regarding to that simple dogfighting game that we know and love. ever since Star Fox 64. It's just like, again, simple arcade, just like going through the ranges and just shooting, and of course to some it's not even using the Landmaster to just basically, yeah, it's a simple shooter, even a gallery shooter in a sense. And I guess what, again, with Miyamoto Shigeru was trying to do with Zero is, like, again, try to revamp that combat system, but by using these motion controls, perhaps even, like, really engage you. I mean, I guess I can follow where he's coming from, but once what we got here is just, yeah, it's just something that, like with Paper Mario, just something that it was uncomfortable. It was like, it's just something that didn't really stick well for many of the Star Fox fans. And like, of course, with the like the new mode, of course, the chicken mode of the R-Wings, as I like to call it, and everything else. I mean, it had its moments. It was definitely fun. I definitely enjoyed the chicken mode, and there was like the hovercraft. I forgot his name, but yeah, like the hovercraft, we actually control a little Rob. I mean, that was fine. As for like the stealth missions, fine, that was okay. But in the end, this thing just didn't feel like the same Star Fox battle system that it was like supposed to be a step up from. Like we've seen like combat systems like out of, like, I know it's a bad comparison, but like from the years age of Mario, from the basic 16 first Mario to Odyssey, and just like that's how you want a series to grow. And yet with here, with Super Mario Star Fox 4-2-0, it just feels like, yeah, that it didn't upgrade well, to say the least. So, like, I don't know how more to describe it. It's just, again, with the force motion controls, and just, like, something else is just lost in that upgrade process that a lot of people just didn't really enjoy Star Fox Zero. I mean, I enjoy my time for most part, but I can understand why people would just didn't feel right with Star Fox Zero's battle system, with everything that, again, from motion controls to everything else. So, yeah, I'll stop there. It's just, like, yeah, Star Fox Zero, definitely one of the more prominent topics of the bad combat systems from Nintendo.
Yeah, Nintendo has no idea what they're doing with Star Fox right now, and it seems like an easy series to get right, so it's odd that they constantly just get it wrong. I don't, like, why have they rebooted the story, like, 6 times? Like, let's just put the Star Fox team in an airplane again, an R-Wing again, and give us some new things to fly through. You can make it a budget title, make it a $30 game, make it 3 hours long. People would love it if it was Star Fox 64 gameplay with just some new stages. That's really all people are asking for.
Yeah, for me, the saddest part, and I know this is partly because I'm a writer and everything, but it's so easy to make the next Star Fox game work. And here's the idea: Star Fox versus Star Wolf. That's it. It's a two-part story, one from the Star Fox point of view, one from the Star Wolf point of view, plenty of space battles, and then multiplayer online component, which can work because they have a good enough online system, is you have like 8v8 Star Fox versus Star Wolf battles. And you can pick any of the past members of Star Fox, you can pick any of the past members of Star Wolf, and you just go at it.
That would be very fun. That's a great idea.
You know, the story can be fun and unique. We know they can do that at times with these characters. And then, like, couple-hour story, just like Star Fox 64. And then just go right into the multiplayer battles. Every ship has their own, like, you can either have each one have their own special abilities or whatever, or keep it all baseline so it's all about pilot skill. I don't care. Just have enough to where they have these, like, either 4v4 or 8v8 dogfight battles, and just let people go crazy. It's not that hard. It took me all of one dog walk to go and figure that out. And no, that's not a lie. I also did the same thing with the F-Zero, but we'll leave that for another podcast when Keith's back on. Keith, I pray F-Zero does return, my brother. I do. But again, it's not that hard.
We banned F-Zero on this podcast.
Banned F-Zero. F-Zero is on my draft, and I will get that point. All right? I'm already 2 for 3. So, no, I'm not. My second point was Pyromithra. But, yeah.
Actually, funny enough, just a couple of minutes ago, a Good Smile Company actually decided to open the pre-orders again for the two figurines that Sakurai had. And lo and behold, it already went sold out already. So, at the time of recording.
Yeah. All right, and Tyler, I'm very curious in this one. What is your pick for the gameplay that just was wrong?
So because I've been so consumed by Bravely Default, one of the complaints I had about that game was the world being a little bland, and that made me think about World of Light and Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. So World of Light isn't a disaster. It's certainly not as fun as Subspace Emissary or as creative as Subspace Emissary, but the problem with it is the pacing. So basically, I assume that our listeners have played World of Light, but if you haven't, the idea is you're in this spirit world. It's a really, really cool opening cutscene, and you have to basically free all of these characters that have been wiped out of existence by fighting them, or by fighting characters who have their spirits possessed. The problem is there are a lot of spirits to fight. There are like 900, I believe, total battles in World of Light, somewhere around there. It's a crazy number of fights, and each fight has a little like unique twist to it. So the Pauline battle is on the Donkey Kong 75M stage, and you fight a giant Donkey Kong with, I think, Peach is like your sidekick or something like that. And it's a creative homage to that series. The problem is the volume and the pacing and the world themselves are very, very bland. There's some battles that will take you like 10 seconds to do. If you're versing a weaker spirit and you have a strong like 4 or 5 star spirit, you'll finish the battle in 4 seconds and move on to the next one. And it's just, you know, it's not an engaging fight. The only fun that comes from those battles is seeing like how Sakurai tied the spirit that you're freeing into the actual fight. The biggest issue, though, is the blandness of the world. I'm not sure why the hub world is what it is, because there were some cool little segments. Like, there's a Donkey Kong Country world. You'll, like, get teleported into the first world of Donkey Kong Country, and you'll travel through all the stages battling spirits. And it's really fun. It's a cool creative homage to Donkey Kong Country. And there's another one for Street Fighter. You'll, like, fly across the world and fight all those people. That's, like, a cool little gameplay thrust that keeps you going. But for some reason, the two main hubs are just these very bland worlds that are just like, you're in a grassy plain and now you're in a mountain and now you're it doesn't do enough to pay homage to the characters. World of Light should have been, I would say, half as long, and instead of using a hub world, you should have been traveling through. Now you're in the Mushroom Kingdom, now you're in Donkey Kong Country, now you're in Dreamland. You know, it would have been a much more a much more fitting homage to the game, which is, yeah, I think that that's what they were trying to accomplish. Was
I think the biggest one that they did, like, that I felt was immersive, was the Triforce area.
Yes, that was great. That was a great one, because yeah, I mean, you're on this giant Triforce, you're fighting Zelda people, and it felt like a Zelda homage, and you really felt like you were engrossed in that world. And with Smash Ultimate, the whole theory behind the game is we're combining all of these game worlds. So if they had packed World of Light with all of those game worlds, that would have provided enough of a hook to make up for the monotony of just chewing through extremely easy battles and then occasionally getting stuck on one extremely hard one. It felt like the execution, a decent idea with botched execution, and ultimately I think they would have been better off going back to the Subspace Emissary kind of traditional story.
I mean, that I remember all the complaints about, like, Subspace Emissary, and I'll always remember, like, kind of questioning what the heck was going on in the story, and then on the Smash Brothers website, they actually had a page called What Happened to Subspace Emissary, and I'm like, if you have to have a page on the dojo, that's what it was called, on the dojo to explain Emissary, you kind of have a problem.
Oh, Emissary wasn't perfect, for
no.
sure.
But it was still fun.
Yeah, I love the character team-ups were iconic. They were so much, it was so Pit and Mario and Yoshi, like, running around together. It was great.
Marth, and Meta Knight.
Ike, Marth, and Meta Knight. Samus and Pikachu. It was very, Lucario, Snake, and Meta Knight. Like, very random and
Metroid,
cool.
Samus and Pikachu.
Yeah, it was just cool to see those characters interacting together. Yeah. And I get that the scope of Ultimate is so much larger, and they were trying to capture that scope. And some of the stuff was very good. I don't even know if this was intended, but I personally walked away from the story feeling as though the battle between Galeem and Darkrun was like the battle between creators and fans. And it felt like Galeem was like the creator, wanting complete control over all the characters, and then Darkrun was the fans who were just like chaotic and trying to kind of claim it all for themselves. And at the end of the game, when you defeat them both, you just kind of like the characters are free to be the characters. I don't know why I felt that way. That's just how I felt.
Tyler,
I thought that was beautiful. But
all right. I'm sorry. Are you talking about World of Light or WandaVision?
I'm talking about World of Light. Maybe I read too much into it. Maybe I'm sure I saw that somewhere, but I just I loved that concept of those two kind of forces, because Smash Bros. Is a series that's been defined, I think, by the creator versus the fans. And like that interaction is odd. I mean, it's in every single element. Like, just look at the reaction to Pyro and Mithra being in the game. You know, the fans are, most of them are like, oh, another sword fighting character, no. And Nintendo is kind of like, you know, on the other side saying, no, we want our characters in here. Sakurai, you know, you have to put these characters in.
Yeah,
so.
You heard what Sakurai said about that, right? He goes, yeah. I don't choose the characters. Nintendo just tells me what to put in.
Yeah, yeah.
So don't ever, that's why the meme is about, you know, don't ever ask you for anything again. You can ask all you want, but it's not gonna matter. He's not the one choosing the characters.
Right. Because if you recall back in the beginning, like all the characters chose for season 2 was already predetermined. They already chose out who's gonna be. So yeah, Sakurai definitely didn't have a choice. Like it was Nintendo giving the house, like, yes, you choose, put this character. You put Min, you put Sephiroth, we put everything else, you put Minecraft Steve.
Ugh, Minecraft Steve.
I can only imagine why they would put Minecraft Steve, but I digress. I can't help but feel a little bit sorry for Sakurai of like with these characters. Yeah,
I'm pretty sure the only character that Sakurai personally has ever ensured. Okay, I think he admitted he got two in there. He wanted Incineroar because he knew he needed to have a new Pokemon entry, and he liked Incineroar's wrestling style. So I think he technically chose that one. And then I'm pretty sure he was the one who convinced Kojima to bring Snake into Smash.
Right.
Because they're friends in real life.
Yeah, and due to that favor. Yeah.
So like that's it. And notice neither of them were sword characters. So make it that what you will. So, all right. And with that, we are ending this episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. Tyler.
Yeah. Last week, I don't think we had a poll, but okay. So
yeah, we did.
I think we had a poll.
But someone didn't put it up till later, so I didn't get to put it on the podcast page.
Well, put it up is one word for what I did, which was forget that I had to put it up and not put it up.
You didn't put it up? I thought you I could have sworn you put it up.
So last week we didn't have a poll.
Oh, jerk.
But
you had one job!
I was very busy and I slipped my mind. I'm sorry.
Fine. You know what, Tyler? Just because I know it's so overwhelming with your 95 hours of free time to go play Bravely Default 2.
I had to beat Bravely Default 2. Like I said, I'm reviewing it for a magazine and I need to do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are a professional podcast and we leave it to our good to our friend Tyler to actually do hold the official Twitter handle of NDP Podcast.
Sorry.
So we'll deal with that.
All right. Because I know you are so busy, Tyler, we won't have a podcast question this week.
Wait. What was the question last week, though?
I don't remember. It was something Pokemon related.
Yep.
That was it. I think it was about the Pokemon Presents. It was like, that was it. What was your favorite part of Pokemon Day? That was it. Was it the virtual concert? Was it Arceus? Was it the Diamond Pearl remix
else?
Yeah, that's right. Everybody said Arceus. Nobody said Diamond Pearl remix. They all agreed with me and said that they were.
Oh, so you did put up the poll question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The results, which a lot of votes, it was like 107 votes, and they all voted for Arceus.
Lies.
None of them voted for Diamond and Pearl.
You sit on a throne of lies.
Yeah. We said, we have a comment in here that says, wow, that Tyler guy is... very smart and 100% right about the graphics being terrible. God.
There we go.
That's interesting. I agree. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Yeah, sure, Tyler. Whatever.
Xenoblade Chronicles 2 fan 6969. That's a good handle, too. I like that.
Bruh.
Okay, I'm ending this madness before it gets even more out of hand. So, of course, let us know what you thought of everything about the show, including what you think about the top 35 of Japan's Nintendo Switch list. Were you surprised at the numbers that some of the games got? Did the recent Monster Hunter presentation get you more excited for the games that are coming out? Have you watched the new episodes of Pokemon Journeys? Let us know in the comments below. So, for Atelier Tyler and Wario Will, I am Triforce Todd. Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. We are not out of lives. We made it to the end of the level. So, raise the flag! Thank you.